Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello and happy hump night from somewhere in middle America, where we're taking that turn toward chilly weather. It was that way today. You know, we got some grace on Saturday. It was 65 degrees, beautiful and sunny, and I'm so happy for that day because now we've done the shift. And I don't know, the older I get, the tougher these Midwest winters are to look forward to, I guess. So anyway, I appreciate you guys being here tonight, and I'm really excited about our guest, who I will tell you about and bring on in just a moment. But for anyone there who's new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. And for those of you who read the program notes tonight might be wondering, I'll remind you that the only requirement at Brain Injury Radio is that all of us hosts have a brain injury. Me included. And other than that, many times our guests are brain injury survivors, caregivers, perhaps offer some type of holistic or alternative healing or compensatory strategies. And sometimes, because we're not defined by our injury, it's just it's human interest. We're still people who have interests in a lot of different things. And I was very excited when I was presented with our guest tonight, because there have been times with some presidential wives where I've wondered if maybe they didn't have a brain injury for some of the crazy stuff that they did, like stay with their husbands. And then lo and behold, Anne comes along and writes this book. And so I'm in the process of being enlightened and looking forward to our interview tonight. But also being a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution, I found this to be a wonderful opportunity to be able to interview Anne. We've studied the presidential wives quite a bit over my years as a member and in the organization, but not quite like this. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of members listening tonight to hear some things that we haven't covered in those lunch meetings, which have been Zoom meetings for quite a while now. But in any case, so my guest tonight is Anne Michaud, and her book is called Why They Stay, Sex Scandals, Deals, and Hidden Agenda of 8 Political Wives. Why do good women stay with bad men? Are political wives just as calculating as their infamous husbands? As a leading political reporter for the Wall Street Journal, Anne covered Bill Clinton's 1996 reelection campaign, Anthony Weiner's 2005 mayoral bid, and Elliot Spitzer's rise and fall as New York's governor from 2006 to 2008. Few folks have had a front row seat to the spectacular fall from grace of these politicians and the women who endured the cataclysm with them, which got her wondering. Me too, but I'm glad she did the heavy lifting, as so many of us have. Why did most of these women stick it out or stay for as long as they did? Were they simply doing the stand by your man blues, or did they have other motivations? This book is the result of her musings and deeply researched and fascinating analysis. For more, and it's in my program notes, you regulars know, and I'll be mentioning it a few times. If you're not by a pen right now, the show is posted all over all types of social media, and I always put the website within my program notes. But for more, you can find it at Anne's website, and that's Anne with an E, A-N-N-E, Michaud, and that's spelled MICHAUD.com, AnneMichaud.com. And these books, of course, are found on Amazon. And when I say these books, Anne's written quite a few of them. I was looking back tonight, and obviously being a journalist with the Wall Street Journal, she's been a writer for a long time, but this isn't her first rodeo writing a book either. Very interesting, though. So I'm going to bring her on right now. Good evening, Anne. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for having me on.
Yes. Well, I'm excited to hear, you know, when we talked, to be honest with you, you know, I remember us talking, and I was looking at times I had open, and the calendar I had election day written in it. And at that time, months ago, when we did this, I didn't know what election that would be. And then last night I was up very late, so I know you're on the East Coast, so you're probably on the edge of tired, and I am too, because I stayed up watching what was going on last night. A lot of people felt like the results would be kind of a commentary of sorts of what's been going on since the changing of the guard. And, you know, in Virginia, they seem to have spoken loud and clear, though close, and it'll be interesting. I think they found out in New Jersey that it's so close. I imagine there'll be a recount involved in that. But you got up to Melania Trump, and I guess Cuomo's been divorced for a while, but I was thinking about the heat that President Biden has taken for observations we didn't really get to see during the campaigning time that are more noticeable now as far as his mental acuity goes. It isn't a secret, me saying it, you know, especially being on Brain Injury Radio. You know, I suffered from a ruptured brain aneurysm. He had two. And So by the time you get to be his age, statistically, people who have had brain injuries, whether it's that, like ours, or, you know, a serious TBI in a car accident, or perhaps blast injuries, the hallmark of this last conflict, there's a good chance that you thought the hard times were around your initial brain injury, and then you find out that that leads you to things later on, not all the time, but, you know, things like dementia and Parkinson's and various degenerative brain diseases. And nobody really talked about that, and we didn't really get an opportunity. You know, the pandemic was a good reason, I guess, for, you know, him not being out as much, but I don't think that people were aware that it was a problem. But there's, you know, I don't know that there's many who haven't noticed at this point that he's a little slower on the uptake. I don't know how you want to put that in a nice way, but I guess you'd be starting again. You're going to be having, throughout the next couple of years, you'll be able to make a sequel, I think. these presidents' wives keep going, but I guess that's kind of part of your book, is that it goes back, even looking at the back, you know, you're going over the pond to the White Queen, who married Edward IV, and then helped build the Tudor legacy by arranging the marriage, the appropriate marriage for the daughter. So this isn't any new dynamic that's been going on, for quite some time. So it looks like things haven't changed, and as many of these books as you want to write, you should be in business to be able to do that. So let me start by asking you, what prompted you to write?
It's about women who stay with their politician husbands after a sex scandal. I was interested in the fact that Hillary Clinton was going to run for president, and this was back in 2014. And I wrote one edition back then, wanted to see what all the common traits might be among these women who do stay in the marriages, whether there's a political element to that. My background was covering politicians, and I did, see the difficulties that several men had run into when they were caught having an affair, and or some other type of sex scandal. We had, I live in New York, and this is where our governor, Eliot Spitzer, was found to be hiring sex workers, and he and his wife got up at the podium, and he resigned, and he said he was sorry, and she stood by him. And they are, in fact, you know, not everybody knows the governor of New York, but their story was an inspiration for the show The Good Wife. And we also had another, and I knew Spitzer administration pretty well. I also knew Congressman Anthony Weiner, who was discovered to be sexting with many women. And his wife stayed with him as well. And I would kind of look at these women as I was covering this, and we never wrote about them as people. We were always sort of, you know, oh, she showed up or she didn't show up or she's, you know, batting his hand away or whatever observations
yeah.
reporters are making. But I thought, you know, these are really intelligent, accomplished, beautiful women. And to me, it seemed kind of a mystery why they were staying in the marriage. So I wanted to dig into it.
I think that, too. I don't have the experience you do, certainly, but that's why I find your book very interesting. But, you know, I had opinions about that with, you know, Hillary. That's one of the most recent huge, you know, that everybody listening tonight, you know, I'm sure remembers the blue dress and that whole scandal, and then her going on. And, you know, I found myself judging it. I didn't want the first woman president to be someone who, quote unquote, intelligent, accomplished or not, rode her husband's coattails through the system and then became the first woman president. For some reason in my mind, that minimized it some. And I'm not someone like, and I don't know her personally, obviously, but, you know, like Tulsi Gabbard, somebody who is a strong, accomplished woman on her own right. You know, she's well-spoken. She served in the military. She's been in politics. And as far as I know, she isn't married to someone who's been in politics. And that's kind of what I was looking for when we would have our first woman president. So, especially because Bill was so messy about everything. And I felt like her dealings were maybe a little questionable, too, on her journey getting there. You know, smart and accomplished can lead you to do good things, or politics, I'm sure we've seen, can lead you to some questionable, what people not in politics might consider questionable or unethical decisions to get there. So in any case, why don't we start there and then we'll go backwards, only because I brought it up, I guess, because it was one of the current ones. We can talk about Melania too. That's interesting that she was the first not a foreigner, you know, a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
Her desire to live the American dream. Now, I don't know if Trump was ever accused of cheating on her. I can't, at least if he did, it didn't make as big of a splash as Bill. And I can't really imagine, if you were Donald and you were married to Melania, why you would want to cheat with anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Did you have an inkling of that?
He did pay $150,000 to two different women. I think that's the right amount to keep them from talking about his affairs. It was a story that was, that won a Pulitzer Prize for the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious. So they were definite affairs and not grab ass like Cuomo is being accused of at this point.
Full I don't on know affairs. What you mean by grab ass.
Well,
you know, sex, not just
copying a
someone,
feel.
But, mm-hmm.
No, he grabbed her breast is what I'm hearing in the news right now. So inappropriate sexual behavior around women. He's not married, having affairs may have something to do with that. I don't know. But he definitely, I guess, is a player as a single person and has been accused now multiple times of being very inappropriate about doing that. But I don't see him getting married in the near future. So in any case, going back to Bill and Hillary, and then I'd like to go back and have you talk about the White Queen a little bit and where this all started. And then I do have a question for you. There, and congratulations, this edition came out June of this year, but it says second edition, and some of the reviews that I've read talk about 9 political wives. Who did you drop? Who didn't make it the final cut?
There were a lot to choose from. So I just tried to find the ones that I found most interesting or most prominent. The first edition of the book, 2 British couples and 1 from Israel, and the Perfumos and Katsavs were the ones I cut from the current edition because I wanted to write a chapter about the Trumps. When I was on book tour for my first book, everybody would ask me, well, what about the Trumps? You know, why does Melania stay? And so I thought I should research them and create a chapter for them in the book. And the advice I had was not to make it too long. So I had to take some out of there. But I do have one chapter on Jack Perfumo, which he was in Parliament in England, and the it was around the same era as the Kennedys in the early 60s, and it was a big scandal there. And that chapter is available. If you go to my website, you can download that one for free.
Oh, great. Good to know. Okay. Interesting, because the reviews, you know, I was reading the reviews in the second edition, and they're, you know, some of the reviews are carried over, and I'm like, wait a minute, where did the 9th person go? Because I guess I'm about halfway through your book, and I see the cover all the time when it's sitting here and 8 wives. And so when I was reading the reviews, I was like, I wonder who didn't make the cut. So that's when I went ahead and looked on Amazon and saw what a prolific writer you have been. You're not only in your career as a journalist, but you've written, and in fact, there was a set that were 5 books, but then there was another, how many books have you written? Like,
no, that's a different
yes?
one. Yeah. The one who writes, not me. It's different than me, so.
Okay. But you
write
wrote
Girls and Monsters and those types of books. That's not me. I wrote.
But you wrote Hunter's
Day.
Trap?
No. No, that's her. Different person.
Really? Her name is spelled exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. It's a really kind of a common French-Canadian name up here in the Northeast.
Interesting. Okay. Well, in any case, still a prolific writer, and you did write a book on Melania herself, so...
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's
yes.
you.
That is.
I had,
you know, the first edition came out, and then I thought, well, people who bought that one, I don't want them to necessarily have to buy the second edition, which has a lot of the same material. So I put
sure.
that out as a short ebook. It's about 40 pages.
Huh. Interesting. And... In her case, aside from what I said, a foreigner's desire to live the American dream. I think, I don't know, to me, be a little more obvious in her case, just stated the way that you did, but you think there's something beyond that? I'm thinking of why, you know, she would have married him in the first place, would be the reason that she would have stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing something on that?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Well, I mean, like Bill and Hillary, they started dating when they were young. Weren't they students together, or at least they went back to when they were in school, very long
mm-hmm.
history together. And you know, I'm going to guess that they're similarly aged relative to Donald and Melania. Big difference. You know, Donald's not a particularly handsome man. He's a lot older. He's extremely wealthy. She was an immigrant, much younger, looks like a model. I can't imagine what would interest her in him, unless it was exactly what you said. To me, that one might seem a little more obvious, unless I'm missing something, that the reason she would have married him in the first place may be the reason that she stayed.
Oh, I see. Well, I think that they actually, you know, what I looked at from my reporting showed that they have a lot of similar opinions in terms of the in politics. I think they're pretty closely aligned, actually. I know people like to, and I don't necessarily think she's a fan of being in public life, but
right.
I think she supports his desire to do that, and she said that many times.
Definitely.
And also in public, and she, so, you know, I think that that's one thing that draws them together, is they're both ambitious people, and she supports his ambitions. I don't know, vice versa. But, and I'm not
right.
doubting that he supports her. I'm just saying I just don't have any ideas about that. But,
as out front as some of, pardon me, I'm sorry to interrupt you. She didn't seem to be as out front as some of the other wives, I guess. I mean, definitely seemed like she was playing a huge supporting role, but not looking so much for her own ambitions as much as supporting his.
Right.
Where there have been others, even like, you know, going back to Jackie Kennedy, not that she was looking for political aspirations herself. She definitely had a supporting role, but she was out there quite a bit. I remember watching,
yeah.
In fact, it should be coming up again sometime soon here. One that sticks out in my mind is, you know, the tour of the White House at Christmas, you know, and all of the Christmas trees and the redecorating that she did. And she was so much more in the public eye, you know, so visible. And they really seemed to treat, and you can speak to this, in fact, much, much better, obviously, you're in the industry, but the change between the Clinton era and the Kennedy era, you know, obviously he was a, if you want to put them on an equally out there philanderer level, they didn't really, in the media, we didn't have 24/7, you know, news. We didn't have all the cable channels. You know, there was a lot of that what didn't even exist back in the Kennedy era. And it didn't seem like reporters went out of their way to dig up the dirt and have that be the topic they were putting out there. It seemed like there was more discretion. And now it appears that if there's blood in the water, boy, they're going after it and highlighting that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think, you know, it, for one thing, you had a different set of people as the reporters in the early 60s. A lot of them were men, and I just think there was sort of a boys' club in terms of what they decided to write about. Then afterwards, obviously, we had the feminist movement. More women did become reporters. And I think there was also this trope in politics where if you had a happy family, quote unquote, or at least one that looked happy, that you were thought to have good character. You'd see, you know, the politicians will send around these pictures of themselves with their spouses and children and dogs. And so I think that's sort of, you know, how we were reading someone. If you have a happy marriage, that means that you treat the people in your life well and you're a good person. And so I think then the press started saying, well, maybe, you know, that maybe that isn't the case. And I think our society generally has just gotten more and more open in terms of, you know, what we're willing to discuss in public. So, yeah, there's a lot
probably
more
much
coverage
to
of
the,
that kind of thing.
Probably much to the chagrin of the politicians at, at the time. Some of yours
quite
in
sure.
your earlier chapters would be just horrified if they saw what was going on today and how their story might have been covered, you know, with the actual news coverage. So interesting. Well, before, and I'm not picking on her, just before we leave her and go back to the White Queen and a pattern that you noticed as you were going through these different wives, why do you think that Hillary stayed in general? One of the, and I'll just say one more thing. One of the things I noticed is it was one way or another, people, women, you did, because you brought up the women's movement, a lot of people seem to be, you know, it's time for a woman president. She was running, and they were protective of her and didn't, I guess, have the judgment I did, you know, initially, which is, maybe another time if we had had a few women presidents. But, I mean, I'm looking for a woman president who really hit the floor running on her own without that that baggage in the back. But others were very protective of that, like it didn't have any relevance at all. And I guess, you know, one of the things I read in the reviews, it might have even been a comment that you made, is, you know, wondering why some women didn't give these men the boot, because you didn't say, I say that they were really, you know, not only getting caught making fools of themselves, but being an embarrassment to their family and an insult to their wife. And I don't know, I spent a long time being single. I didn't get married till I was 45. And I tell you, there wouldn't have been an amount of money or a man who put me through that probably would have still been breathing, but I wouldn't definitely not have been married to him. And so mm-hmm. maybe that's why, just the difference, you know, of being independent on my own merits, you know, and in my own career, that I just looked at that and, blah, you know, just would have had a lot of satisfaction if she would have given him the boot. But just because it got so loud, you know, it wasn't just he had an affair, a passing story, but, you know, the whole blue dress thing and the cigar thing. I mean, God, it just went on and on with the most embarrassing. That had to be so humiliating for her, and to be in the public mm-hmm. eye and go through that kind of thing. I felt sorry for her, but she didn't leave either.
You know, she was actually had quite a bit of accomplishment before she and Bill got together. She was the president, I think, of the class in or student council when she was at Wellesley, and was the mm-hmm. commencement speaker, was named by Life magazine as one of the 10 college students to watch that year when she graduated in the 60s. She was an early advocate for children's rights and children's welfare, graduated from Yale with a law degree, and was one of the people who went right out of law school to help work on the Watergate hearing in Washington. So she was actually very prominent and accomplished on her own and recognized by her peers as a leader because they voted her into the position she had at Wellesley as a college student. So I think that, you know, the thinking that she isn't someone who had accomplishments beside her husband, that's just false. I do think that we think Hillary arrived on the scene in 1992, but I don't think that that's true. I think if you
look at her
background,
she's definitely a smart. And I maybe didn't present it in the way I meant it. I don't doubt she had qualifications, but I wish that she would have been running rather than her husband running first and her coming next. That's all. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've got to be accomplished to make it to that point at all. And she mm-hmm. definitely had the qualifications. It's a pity she didn't go first. You know, she probably would have been the first woman president had she run instead of Bill. But
maybe.
I'm just talking about the fact that Bill ran first. I guess I'd like to see the first woman president be independent. You know, somebody who
mm-hmm.
comes of her own accomplishment and accord and isn't married maybe to somebody in politics. Maybe the husband
mm-hmm.
has a supporting role in the scenario I'd like to see. But, okay, so you think she stayed with him for love?
Yeah, I do think, you know, everything that I've read and heard about them is that they were really committed, maybe soulmates or best friends, or I don't know, you know, what the best thing you could be to have someone, I guess you could say in love, but I've been married a long time, 26 years, and sure, we're in love, but there has to be more than that, you know, there has to be that respect and friendship. So I think, yeah, I do think the Clintons have that from everything I've seen. Clearly, you know, my husband and I are faithful to each other. We don't we wouldn't accept, you know, that kind of infidelity in our marriage. So it's it's different. I guess it's different for everyone. My concern was to look at people who are in public life, because I think mm-hmm. that it's really important how women act in public life and are treated by the media or by their husbands in public. I mean, I think it's not a good thing to have women humiliated in public. So, exactly.
That's what I thought. And I guess, you know, I don't know about booting him out in the middle of everything, but I would have felt like, see, it's also the people in public life are setting examples, you know, for
mm-hmm.
everybody. And it's not like kids are
right.
are watching, but kids are little sponges, you know, and they hear their mm-hmm. parents talking and they see things that are on the news, and whether they fully comprehend it or not, you know, if they see that, get the idea that that's something that's acceptable
mm-hmm.
to be humiliated by anyone publicly
right.
in such a way. That I found offensive also, I guess, is just
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
that is not a good example to be putting out there to aspire, you know, to having that be one of the characteristics or prerequisites to be a president, you know, and it's not. Thankfully, we've had a lot of presidents, at least that they're, if they have a story, it hasn't come up, or they just haven't had that proclivity,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they have painted that picture truthfully that you laid out of what the archetype of a healthy family, how you treat the people around you, might be how you treat the people in public and the people that you've been,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, elected to serve. I just had such little respect and for that. So, I don't know. I think they definitely had a long-term relationship, so it appears, I don't know, maybe he's got an addiction or some kind of a
mm-hmm.
problem that way or something. I don't know if that was an
mm-hmm.
issue in their early dating life or not, but it certainly hit with a huge splash. Again, you know, all of the media outlets that we didn't have a long time ago that really kept expanding the details, you know, expanding
mm-hmm.
the details of the story. And then, you know, the abuse of power, that was the other thing, you know, having it be an intern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I just found that whole thing really messy and a bad example that I wouldn't want
mm-hmm.
kids or anyone, you know, thinking that that's okay, you know, and we just look the other way and that behavior is okay and it doesn't have anything to do with the way a person rules a country, runs a country. You know, I don't think that that's necessarily true. If you see someone who is dishonest to their family, then there's, you might think, wonder about their honesty factor all the way around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself
right.
doing that when he was talking, you know, questioning it, where if you had a president where that didn't come up and they had the family that you talked about, then you really don't have an issue. Like right now, there's such a lack of trust. You know, it's been such a cluster for the last number of years with people not trusting what's going on in the government or trusting what's true and what isn't true. You know, and there's just kind of been a stack of those going up, and it's kind of put things on a societal level, I think, in a bad place that people don't feel like they can trust. They have to wonder if our leaders are being honest, and the people that support them, you know, if they're being honest or not. And maybe we'll go back to the beginning of your research. And again, it wasn't reported, so people didn't really have a reason to probably think about it that hard back in the day, because it wasn't just constantly in your face to think about. But in any case, so you recognized a pattern because you were out covering all of the events that you mentioned, and then went back, kind of were interested in what the impetus might be, what the motive might be, that these women stay in these relationships. And we did bring up women in general staying in relationships like this, but then you add the public eye to it in politics, mm-hmm. and again, that puts it out there for everybody to see.
Right.
It's not hidden like maybe the neighbor, you know, and what they're doing, but they might be making the same decision. Do I stay? Do I go? Mm-hmm. You know, for some of the same reasons and motives
right.
that you discuss
right.
about the political characters. But what, first of all, will you just tell us about the White Queen, kind of where it starts and how far this pattern goes back? Because when you said Hillary didn't just step out in whatever year, true, let's go back for a moment, all the way back to where you started and the dynamic that went on and the motivation that went on in that particular case and the similarities that you might have seen as a parallel
mm-hmm.
coming through
the eight or nine
people that you wrote about.
I looked at Eleanor Roosevelt, Jackie Kennedy, Marion Stein, which is the only British couple that I ended up keeping in this edition, Hillary Clinton, Wendy Bitter. They're a couple from Louisiana. David Bitter was a U.S. senator. Hilda Wall, Spitzer, and Huma Abedin, wife of Anthony Weiner, and Melania Trump. So those were the eight, and I started researching them and started finding that there were a lot of common threads in their lives, which was really fascinating to me. Some of them, I think, ended up, you know, motivating them, giving them five traits that I felt made them stay in the marriage. Some of them are common to women in private life, as you mentioned a minute ago. For example, they were brought up in a very traditional way that, you know, told that this is what you do, is you stay in the marriage. Some of them had reasons to long for, they had maybe something sad in their past that they sought emotional security, or they didn't have money. So they were looking for security in a financial way. Often you find that they have a personal sense of patriotism, something that they want to accomplish together in the world, you know, goals and ideals that they have for their political life. And they feel responsible for the family's emotional health, for their children, which isn't different from many private couples. But then the fifth trait that I laid out was that they have an ambition to build a legacy for themselves and for their children. I think that's a little bit political couple. And after I got done with that kind of research, one of my editors, book editors, said to me, well, can't you sum this up in some sort of easy phrase for people to remember? And I thought, well, let me find a metaphor about a person in the past who did this sort of thing, made this sort of bargain, a woman who married because that was how she got made her way in the world and felt like she had to do that to have some security and a position and take care of her family. And I ended up settling on a woman named Elizabeth Woodville, who lived in the 1400s. She was a widow at the time, had two children, no money. You know, she had come from a landed family, but really didn't have any means. And she met the man who, as you mentioned, Edward IV, who was becoming king. They fell in love and got married, and she put up with, you know, many affairs of his, but also managed to find a nice place for her family at court. She had 9 or 10 brothers and sisters, and they got positions, and really the family did very well by the standards of the time. And her descendants turned out to be Henry VIII and Elizabeth I, who ruled, you know, the Tudor dynasty for 70 years. I'm not probably wrong about that. Many, many years. I wanted to say, like, she sort of, you know, is a little bit of a metaphor for a woman who makes her way in the world this way. And I thought it was also a little bit weird that, you know, now women have so many more possibilities for getting an education, being able to support ourselves financially. I thought, you know, it's kind of a contrast, right, that this woman, the modern women, would make similar choices to someone who had so many fewer options back when. And
right.
In the book, I thought, well, let's give them a score, each of the 8 women I profiled, on a scale of 1 to 10 of how motivated she seems to be by these traits that she has in common with the quote-unquote white queen, which is, that was the name given by historians to Elizabeth Woodville, because of, she was the... during the War of the Roses in England, one side was the red rose and the other side was the white rose, and that was her area.
Right.
She's the white, known as the White Queen.
So when you looked at these other 8, 9 women that you looked at, did you find generally that they scored similarly, even though times changed? I mean, some of these, it's not that when you talked about options back in the White Queen's day, she probably had an option, but it wasn't probably going to be very desirable of an option compared to the one that she selected. Now, as
right.
you say, these days, women have a lot more options. So when we talk about, you know, the women's movement and how we've grown to be able to accomplish some of these things on our own, get that education, get that experience, then staying in these marriages for the modern day woman who might have some other choices, scoring wise, why would you think, for example, their family, when you talk about keeping the family together, then there comes the debate, is it good, again, to affirm to your own children, plus all the children out there that are watching and absorbing this, that this is an appropriate way to be treated, both personally in an intimate relationship with your spouse, and then to let it be taken to the public square, as it were, and have everybody talking about it and judging it. It had to be tough on the kids in these later, more recent examples, because there is so much media attention brought to these things, that it would be, it's hard to say what's healthier, I guess, these days.
Well, I think, you know, I tried to give them the rating based on these five different qualities. So, for example, let's see, Jackie Kennedy was a person who felt very responsible for her children's emotional health. I think after her husband was killed, she went out and invited past friends and people from his administration to come to dinner to talk to their children, because, you know, those kids were so young, didn't really know their dad. Mm-hmm. And she would say that she wanted them to know him, you know, through his friends, through people who had loved him and worked with him, not just, you know, to read about his death in the paper and have that be the whole of,
yes,
of what was passed on to Caroline and John Jr. So I think, you know, that, like, for that reason, I would give her more of a score of being sort of a white queen, like, that she wanted to keep the family together and polish that legacy of her husband. So that's kind of where I went with my king on them.
I think so too. I remember all of the photos, and isn't there a photo of little John sitting in his dad's office under the desk? Is that what it is? So many great photos. And when he died, the saluting, just that's, you know, really etched on a generation, that whole thing. So I think that was noble and really a heartfelt thing that she did for her children by doing that, you know, having people come in that loved John and were able to share those experiences with the children about how their dad was. That way, you know, if they heard things later on, they were going to have more of a balance, you know. I don't know how many people's friends sit down and talk to the kids about their parents, you know what I mean?
Right,
like
in
the case of Hillary and Bill, you know, I don't know how many of their friends would have come and talked to their daughter, you know, about their, in the same way, that kind of thing. So, you know, she was kind of at mercy of what she grew up with, what she saw within the walls of the house, and then kind of watched it play out in public, which is unfortunate for the Kennedy kids. The way that was handled was unfortunate it had to be the way it was, that their father died when they were young. But short of that, I think Jackie really did a wonderful service to her family by doing what she did. So that was great. What about Eleanor? Eleanor and FDR.
She didn't have to, you know, confront these things in public, as you mentioned. I think it was after they had both died that it came out that he had had affairs. But she did discover when they were, before he was president, he was Undersecretary of the Navy, and he was traveling and writing love letters to a woman named Lucy Mercer. And Eleanor was unpacking his bag when he came back from Great Britain and found the letters and confronted him and was really heartbroken. And they talked about maybe getting a divorce at that time. And his mother convinced them to stay together. It was part of the reason was her argument that they should stay together. I think perhaps she was thinking about Franklin's school career at that point, his mom, Sarah Delano. But then also Eleanor had said she wanted to stay together for the children. They had five kids. And I think that she ended up making quite an interesting life for herself. Even after that heartbreak came through, she, as First Lady, began writing a six-day-a-week newspaper column called My Day. And I think that was her way, she said that was her way of trying to comfort the American people when they were going through such hard times in the 30s during the Depression and the war.
Right.
She was a representative to the UN. She helped advocate for many of the social programs that FDR put into place. So I think she was really quite an amazing leader. And it gave me sort of a lump in my throat when I think about, you know, that came from personal pain that she had to go through in her marriage.
Yeah, I was going to say, in her case, whether it was that or just the medal that she managed to reach in and grab, she really was involved. And I think, like you say, comforted the country and was actively involved. You know, again, one of those spouses that wasn't definitely playing a supportive role, but I think you called it living separate lives together, and that was in one of the chapters. And she definitely had her part that she played in that partnership, her contributions, you know, to his political service for the country on her own right, which, yeah, she got past the pain and, well, maybe didn't get past it, but it certainly went through it and came out the other side. And the experience made her stronger, or at least cemented whatever she had, you know, to begin with, especially, you know, back then, that she didn't shrink and become invisible or with that broken heart. Do some of the other things she could have done. So, yeah, she had a big family and I think led a great example for her kids of how you go on and be autonomous. And again, they didn't have to face the media, you know, a camera in their face, a reporter in their face all the time. So they were just able to watch their mom evolve into something that, you know, there weren't a lot of women in that era. She set a good example for women of her time who maybe were more used to, not necessarily in politics, although in politics too, but just in general, women were playing more of a supportive role. And mm-hmm. she really found her power, you know, got yeah. empowered on her own and set a really good example for the women to come after her, whether they could achieve that themselves or not, that it could be done, which I think is really, really awesome. So
yes, me too. I admire her a lot.
Yeah, I do too. And yeah, she was a spirited woman. And I've got a great grandmother who was like that. So I remember when I was reading about Eleanor, you know, the different, I mentioned in the beginning, I'm a member of Daughters of the American Revolution, mm-hmm. and we've been through some of those early wives, and it is interesting. Obviously, it doesn't get into the level that you're getting into in your book, but just, you know, how they conducted themselves generally, you know, were they a background support player playing that kind of a role,
mm-hmm.
or were they out there empowered? And actualizing in a way that they wouldn't have had an opportunity to do, maybe, had their husband not been in politics, because at that time it really wasn't in the offing for them to be on their own. So certainly inspiring to women after that. So what do you think was, after you wrote this, what would you say that, and I want to encourage people to read it again, my guest tonight is Anne Michaud, and Why They Stay, talking about eight political wives, the sex scandals, deals, and hidden agendas that they stayed in the marriages. And she, Anne, starts way back and comes up to current. So there's a good time all the way from the Tudors to the Trumps and some in between. And these are really fascinating stories on human character, acting and reacting or responding, the roles that people play in marriages, and when
mm-hmm.
things, in this case, in Anne's book, like sex scandals, deals, and hidden agendas come up, how those are handled and what kind of an impression, an example that is for everybody who's witnessing it as they're making history with this. And, you know, I don't know if they're thinking about that at the time. Well, I guess at the time they're probably not thinking they're going to be caught, hoping they're not going to be caught, you know, hoping they're not going to be in the middle of this mire, you know. And
right,
I remember,
right.
you know, when it came up with Wiener, and, you know, God help him for his last name, you know, and then what he got caught
I
doing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
talk about the butt of jokes, you know. Geez Louise. You know, those are, that's history now. You know, that's history. You know, and I wonder, you know, we all can probably look at this not in the same context, but, you know, if certain things that we had done in our life were going to be, I've said often that, you know, I thank God there wasn't even computers when I was coming up, let alone social media, YouTube, and
mm-hmm.
drones and cameras on everything. And and cell phones and trackers and all the things that we have now, you know, and you got a test
right.
pattern. What was it, at midnight or something, with the three TV channels that we had? You know?
I remember.
Yeah, and that, in a way, I think that that was good, you know, because they chew this stuff over and over and over on the news,
mm-hmm.
and now that
mm-hmm.
it's, as a report, as a journalist, I guess I'd like to ask you, the Wall Street Journal is different. Different than what some of them I'm talking about, but just because you've been in journalism for a while, I'm just curious about your observations and the change. You know, when I was a kid, and maybe, you know, as a kid, maybe you don't remember things correctly, but it seems like they took the news and they reported the news and left it up to you. I mean, sometimes the news on its face, you didn't have to think about it a lot. You know, that's the
mm-hmm.
news was the news. And they were simply reporting the news. And now, at least on, well, a lot of written publications, but also, you know, on cable news, people have drawn up sides and you know, now there's some deals and hidden agendas, you know, going on.
Yeah.
You really kind of have to listen. I know when the elections were going on, I was encouraging people to listen to both channels. I mean, you really only needed to listen
to
two of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, listen to Fox and CNN, and you pretty well got it covered. The polar extremes,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
right. There are a lot of,
you know,
extremes now.
Well, there are, and that was one of the things that, you know, why I encourage people to do it, because I was watching the change, you know, and I'm obviously, you've seen it too, you know, that it used to be people could have a discussion and, you know, not agree and, you know, maybe escalate a little bit, but then whatever drew them together in the first place, whether it was a business acquaintance or
mm-hmm.
a dear friend or a family member or whatever, you know, you didn't talk about it, you know, and we used to have a saying about not talking about, you know, politics or religion, you know, things like
mm-hmm.
that could tend to be inflammatory. And, you know, if people
mm-hmm.
did and they found out that they thought differently, you didn't lose respect for that person. You certainly didn't write them out of script forever, you know, or become hateful and malicious and malign those people. You know, you went to lunch, you know, went on with your day and went on with the other elements of your relationship that brought you together in the first place. And this dynamic the last several years has just blown me away at
mm-hmm.
relationships that have ended about things that I think are going to be trivial and forgotten, you know, a decade from now. Maybe not, but I just mean some relationships that were important, solid relationships that took such a severe hit over this that people can't agree to disagree anymore. Their heels are just dug in on, you know, whatever side they were on. So when the elections were going on, I was telling people, you know, watch both channels. You know, watch both channels and then make up your own mind, because one of the problems with watching one, you know, you're going to find the people that you agree with and then the same narrative goes along. But, you know, and it's kind of some of the things they're talking about with school now. You know, I'm old enough that when I was in college, they gave you both sides. And it was assumed, you know, you were there to make your brain grow. And so
mm-hmm.
you actually didn't hear bias. You got to hear both sides. And then you used your brain to extrapolate and look at that information, and then you came up with your opinion. You know, it wasn't fed to you. It wasn't indoctrinated to you, insisted upon. You actually heard both sides and then made up your mind based on all of the facts that were available at the time. And that's, you know, I don't know, that's something that I hope that we get back to before too awfully long. It makes people lazy to just pick up somebody else's point of view and run with that without even hearing the other side, you know, and you might still come away, you know, feeling the way that you did in the first place, and that's fine, but at least you know the comparison and can say that you've looked at both sides and this is how you feel about it. And so how has that factored in at all? Again, your newspaper's different. I spent 30 years as a financial consultant before my brain injury and coming this direction. So I read the Wall Street Journal all the time. It was a business newspaper. It's not like Washington Post or New York Times or, you know, one of the other newspapers, more neutral or not neutral, but showing what I'm talking about, both sides. Mm-hmm, and I was reading business, you know, the business section, and the other section seemed like it was the closest to reporting that, you know, that was still going on.
I feel that way about the journal too, although to be 100% honest, I started working for a different news organization this week. 2 days ago, I am now working for Crane's New York Business, which is a business publication in New York City, and they just have a wonderful team there. So I love the journal. I miss it. I'm going to miss it, but and I do think that they do a really great job of being very accurate, careful with what they're reporting, and trying to go straight down the middle. So, you know, I really can't say enough good things about them. But I think, you know, to your point about the, we used to be able to trust the news and, or at least feel as though it was, had some fairness, and then we could make up our own minds. I think, you know, a couple of things. I think people are just more informed now. There's so much information that you see something on the news and you don't just necessarily take it in and say, oh, that's, you know, that's the truth. I think there's a lot more questioning of what is reported and you know, what's emphasized, really. You know, you could pick one fact and say this is the most important, and you might disagree with that. But in the past, you didn't necessarily have the internet and all of even competing news organizations that had different philosophies, you know, that made people question whether the news was being done well. So I think, you know, in the past, maybe we were slightly, you know, a little bit like a little more innocent, maybe.
Maybe that was, you know, part of that mistrust, though, when you talk about the different sources, you're right, but then you bleed over into, and I'm just asking your opinion, and I know you're probably getting tired. I'm going to plug the book again, talk about that as you're leaving and let you go to bed, but I'm just interested in you, you know, having a long career in journalism and all the changes that have made and how you feel about that, because, you know, I think my mistrust got worse. I mean, you can Google something, but, you know, as we're finding out now, and I knew before, I could smell it a mile away from the very beginning. But with social media and Google, you know, the search engine, that's why I mentioned talk about deals and hidden agendas, you know, not just in the marriages and with the politicians, but with the news media and politics and who they're tied to. You know, I don't trust Facebook at all, as far as I can throw them. And one thing that surprised the heck out of me was they were even considered a news organization. I mean, think about it. When Facebook first came to light, it was, you know, the kids would get on there and post their pictures and do what they do, and then the older people would get on there to see what their kids and grandkids were doing.
Because that's how it started,
you know,
right?
Well, yeah, when you did see them, they had their face in their smartphone, and, you know, so, you know, we joined. People like me missed Facebook, or whatever that first one was called. Anyway, I wasn't into... Yeah, MySpace. I wasn't into social media at that time. In fact, I didn't get into social media until I wrote a book and I realized back in 2011 that, you know, social media and the internet was the new way of marketing, you know, with a background in marketing, you know, marketing a book. I was marketing financial services before. Now I was marketing a book. I saw that times had changed. You got to join one of these, you know, social media things to get access to people. And you get, you know, more than an access just in your city. You get an access around the world. So, you know, I did it for those reasons.
Right.
And Facebook was the first one that I joined. And, you know, I noticed my friends, you know, what they were joining for was different than what I was joining for. They were watching their kids and their grandkids. And then, you know, as soon as the kids found that out, they moved.
They moved.
You know? Yeah, they moved Instagram or Snapchat or wherever they moved to. You know, they thought, oh, my God, you know, my parents and grandparents are watching, and they all left. And then the rest of us were tired, and we just stayed on Facebook. So now it's a bunch of middle-aged people on
really
Facebook.
Is.
And, the, you know, and the kids have all gone somewhere else. But, you know, when I found out that they considered themselves a news organization, I did a big, fat double take, and I was, what? You know? I've never considered them a news organization, you know, to be qualified or designed to be, certainly not. In any of the rest of them, I won't just pick on them. Twitter, you know, I use that to promote on, but, you know, you ask me what time it is and I tell you how the watch works. And so I never really got into Twitter, you know, the way that I would hear on the news about what people were tweeting. And I was wondering, God, how do they say all that in 10 characters? You know,
exactly.
So I wasn't too big into that, but, you know, I kind of wondered how they even got involved in news. I never viewed them as news, and to be honest, I still don't, you know, consider them to be news. So I don't take them seriously on that level. I know not everyone agrees with me. People actually go there for their news or go to Google for news, you know, and those are really not unbiased, do have hidden agendas. And do take advantage, you know, they do take advantage. And so I don't even count them as being in the mix, yet they have such a big part in it now and are tied to different media organizations and political organizations in one way or another. But you can't even go on social media and look at pictures of somebody's cat without hearing somebody thinking they're reporting something, you know, at this juncture. So it's really crazy how things have changed over the years, but I'm hoping we can go back to, you know, and I don't know, maybe you never get to go back, but I hope that it evolves again in the future, that we can really get to unbiased reporting and be able to hear the facts and have people be able to use their brains, you know, hear the facts and not, because if you go out and try to verify what you've heard someone say, chances are, you know, if you go to Google or to Facebook, they're funded by the party you may be checking up on. So you're going to not find different information. You're going to find the same information reframed, and it's actually the same people. I mean, it's not, it's two different people, but they're all working off the same payroll, so to speak, you know? And so you're really not able to find the truth because there's, quote unquote, more resources. You've got to be really careful what those resources are, because you're just going to be hearing a replay of the same thing, you know. And when it starts getting that way about the CDC and you know, different, the FDA, different government agencies, and you take, you know, the reporting on Fauci, for example, and the mask, yes mask, no mask, yes vaccine, no vaccine. I mean, it's been crazy. I think people are more confused. Well, I think maybe they're angry and frustrated now. Let's say last year, they were probably more confused because it was really hard to find something that you would consider to be a credible source. You know, the goalposts kept moving and just hard. So I hope a time will come back where we can trust what's being reported and, you know, be able to make, like I said, make our decisions based on credible, unbiased facts about what's going on. But in any case, again, make sure to check out Anne's website, and that's AnneMichaud.com, Anne Michaud, and the book you'd be able to find there. She also talked about being able to download a free chapter on the ninth political wife that didn't make it to the book. So check that out. But I think you'll really like this book. It's very telling, and not only about history and how we've reacted over history, historical circumstances, all the way back from the Tudors, like I said, the Tudors to the Trumps and in between, and insight into relationships. And it's just a really fun, fun telling read and very well written. Great. You're an excellent writer, and I commend you on that. I get a lot of books that come through, and this is really just an excellent book. I think it would give you a lot of insights. And even though this one happens to be about politicians, and it does make it different when you're a public figure and when you're in politics, there's some factors that come into play. But the things, you know, some of the rating factors that you were just talking about are as relevant in civilian relationships as well. And so I think not only will you be entertained and informed and enlightened about the things she's directly writing about in her book, but also just relationships in general and the things that people find important, the motives that make you stay, that make you leave, and the changes that have gone on over time. So congratulations on your book. I really appreciate you being on the show tonight, and good luck with the book, and I hope that we can stay in touch, and when you come out with the next date, which shouldn't take too long, This is a good track to be running on, and congratulations on your new job. I was going to say, I don't think that this is going to change. Obviously, you picked a topic that is always going to be relevant as long as you're writing, and so and interesting, you know, interesting to people. So interesting and entertaining, that's what I find pretty cool about the book. It's easy to read, but I like history books, but who doesn't like some sex scandals and hidden agendas, as long as they aren't going on in your house, right?
Yes, that's a good qualification, as long as they're not in my house.
Well, yeah, that is great.
I so appreciate having a conversation with you tonight. You were making a point a couple of minutes ago about people not being able to be civil with each other and just talk about the issues without choosing sides and going to their separate corners. And so I really appreciate what you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I don't do that. I obviously, you can probably tell by talking to me, I've got strong opinions on things, but I've never written anybody off for having a difference of opinion. That's their choice,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way I look at it, you know, and maybe that's something I interestingly that, you know, you're my guest tonight and it is what we were talking about, but as a rule, I'm not a political show. You know, I'm not talking about politics. I need my whole audience, you know, so
mm-hmm.
for what I do, I'm an advocate and I'm helping raise awareness for brain injury a lot of the time. And that's
mm-hmm.
relevant to everybody, no matter what their sex, their color, their politics, you know, disability is the great leveler for everybody. And so I don't generally talk about that. But, you know, one night I said something and one of my listeners, and I'm so sorry that I did, but I misstepped and I said something, and my longtime listener for probably a decade, he had been in my chat room and been a listener, but he kept sending me a bunch of stuff that isn't, you know, it's not something that I agreed with. And so I didn't want to engage about it. I said, I'd appreciate
mm-hmm.
it if you didn't send me things about politics. You know, and then I ventured to say that I disagreed, but it isn't worth the discussion, you know, if you ever, you know, if you wanted to discuss, we could, but I can see that you feel very deeply, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that's fine, but I don't want to talk about it. Neither one of us is going to sell each other, you know, on the
mm-hmm.
other one's point of view. And so
mm-hmm.
I don't think, you know, that that's a road to go down. And and it was very interesting because, you know, it was someone who, one of the shows I did was on an alternative form of treatment. And this isn't heroic. This is what I think is sad, because I'm not, this isn't a limited example of what's going on in society as a whole. But, you know, this man had been in a wheelchair from a very bad accident for 30 years. And hadn't walked in 30 years. And I did a show on hyperbaric oxygen treatment on HBOT. And it was interesting because it was an individual freestanding clinic in North Carolina that I had on as my guests talking about the treatment and going through that. And he lives in Northern California. And different things hit people at different times. You know, one time you might hear something and it doesn't make an impact on you at all, you know, and that's that. But then when the time is right, you know, I guess something resonates with you that you hear and you act upon it. Well, he called and wound up finding a place like this place in North Carolina, and it's, he doesn't drive, that happened to be 13 minutes away from where he lived and on the public transit system. And so he started going and getting these treatments, and he's able to walk, not walk now, walk with a three-legged walker. And not all the time, but the point is after 30 years, he was able to get up out of a wheelchair and walk.
That's
because
quite
of
something.
It is, and I'm so grateful and happy for him that, that he's able to do that and have no ill will about his political leanings, you know. They are what they are. I don't care. But what brought us together in the first place, and I guess that's what I'm talking about, whether it's a family member, a friend, a business, you know, in our case, the fact that we both had a brain injury is what brought us together a decade ago, a decade. And he was here for every single show. And a comment I made and then asking him to please not send me any more political things. He's never come back and isn't talking to me. It
it's
is
really unfortunate.
You know, yeah, it breaks my heart. If I could take back what I said, I would. But on the other hand, I, you know, I said what I said. You wouldn't believe all the stuff he sent me. You know, he clogged my email box with all kinds of this stuff. And I, you know, I wasn't interested in reading or seeing either side. You know what I mean? You get burned out if you watch the news. You've heard enough, you know. Well, the other part of it, too, is I don't spend, you know, I don't get notifiers for Facebook or social media or any of that. I understood the first time I logged on that there was an addictive function going on and that they had researched it and planned it. And I said, no, I will check into Facebook when I want to check in to Facebook. And so I don't have notifiers that drive me crazy and interrupt face-to-face conversations I'm having with people. And I spend a very limited amount of time on social media. And, you know, I was going to control it, not have it control me. So, you know, if I'm doing research or whatever, I spend time on the computer, it gives me a stiff neck and it makes my eyes go buggy. You know, I just, there's so much life to live. I guess you get to be a certain age and you understand life is outside there. You know, how much time do I want to spend, you know, sitting at the computer? You know, there's people that are on the computer practically 24/7 doing this stuff. And I'm like, don't do it. You know, you miss so much of the reality that that's actually going on in your own backyard, Dorothy, you know? So anyway, I didn't mean to go into all that, but I just, I feel, obviously I still feel really badly about that.
Right.
I feel badly for anybody that's going through that. And that's what society is driving right now in the media. You know, people didn't innately, the two of us didn't innately have that kind of contempt for each other. I don't have any at all, still, you know. But, I mean, people weren't that way. The media was feeding that. The politicians were feeding that. And people have gotten angry, you know, and that's, I've seen so many relationships ruined. And like I said, the basis of the relationship, it's so sad that something like one campaign, you know, or whatever, one presidency could screw-up relationships that were people thought. The disappointing thing to me, I think, is that you thought relationships were grounded a lot stronger on a lot of different levels, that something like that couldn't be the end of something that it had been a decade long, you know, or in cases of families. My God, on social media, I've seen family members break up, you know, and they've been together their whole lives, you know, and had things in common and elements that forged their relationship and bonded their relationship, and it became over difference in politics, and that's just sad. You know, that's really when I think some of the social media particularly and fed by the other media can just, people need to shut off the TV, you know, shut off the TV, shut off the computer, you know, go out and have coffee and try to focus on the things that are, you know, really important at the end of the day. You know, we're not going to remember this when, you know, in our final days. You know, what we're going to remember is the relationships, the quality of the relationships, the joys, the memories. You know, I don't think we're going to be sitting there on our deathbed thinking about the campaign in 2016. You know, I just, anyway, I don't mean to lament on you like that, Anne, but
would like us to focus more on what we have in common. I agree with you.
Yeah, more the similarities than the differences, you know, I think, and that will help bring the country back together. I mean, it's in our name, United. I'd like to see that again, you know. I mean, geez, it's in our name, for God's sake, you know. I'd love to see us be united again, and that's one of the ways to do it, is to look for the similarities, not the differences, and take the news for what it is, you know, be informed and go on with your life and go on with your relationships. Social media shouldn't be the center of it, and neither should bias in one way or the other. So, anyway, thank you so much for writing your book, and thank you so much for being here tonight. I really appreciate you spending the extra time and being up so late, and I'm going to go ahead and let you go, and for the next 5 minutes or so, I'm just going to talk more about your book and your website and encourage people to buy your book and check it out, because it really is well written. Easy for the listeners out there to read, and I think that you'll find it fascinating. So good luck with your book, best wishes, stay safe, and congratulations, and enjoy your new job. Sometimes it's just time for a change.
Thank you so much, Kim. It was a real pleasure meeting you and getting to know you tonight.
Thank you. You as well. It was really an honor to have you. You're a very accomplished woman. I like to be around those. Can always learn.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good night. Have a good rest.
Good night.
And thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Okay, everybody, that was, again, Anne Michaud. It's spelled differently than that. In fact, I had to get a correction on there, but it's M-I-C-H-A-U-D, Anne Michaud. And you can find her website, annemichaud.com. It's in my program notes. Chances are you are looking at my program notes. You might have clicked a link somewhere on social media to listen to the show. If not, you can check out my website, inaflash.org, and there's a column that says shows, I believe, a tab, and you can find my show there or at braininjuryradio.com. And in the program notes, for why they stay, you'll be able to find her website. So if you haven't been by a pen or you came in late, the website is there. Check it out. Her book is on Amazon. She does have the Audible and the Kindle, I believe. And I'm sitting here with the paperback, and it's a good amount for us to read, not too thick, not too thin, nice size font. So for those of you who may have some brain issues out there with reading, it's great, because with being about 8 different political wives, this isn't something that you have to sit and read from beginning to end, although I think you might want to. They're like separate chapters, separate stories, and so easy to read. And if you like history, political history, women's issues, relational issues, I think this would be the kind of book that you would enjoy. Again, it's called Why They Stay, Sex Scandals, Deals, and Hidden Agenda of 8 Political Wives by Anne Michaud. And so I'd like to thank you guys all for listening. Next week should be, let's see, next week we might be creeping up on Veterans Day and changing our clocks. Heaven forbid. The good news is we get one more hour. The bad news is it's darker earlier. So going through some change over the next couple weeks, I guess. One thing I would like to say is that Michael, and I'll be bringing this up over the next few months, but Michael, who's a regular caller to the show, is sick. He's going to be going through some heavy duty treatments. He had to do it once before, and he's had a reoccurrence. If you're the praying sort or sending out good energy or whatever you do to help someone out, if we keep our thoughts and prayers with Michael, I personally am someone who believes in the power of that energy, and he's going to be needing it. I know I will be doing it. So our thoughts and prayers are with Michael as tomorrow he starts treatment, and it's going to be for 5 days a week for 5 weeks. So a pretty heavy duty hard time. So he's going to be tired and probably won't be around for a little bit on air with me calling in. So please keep him in your thoughts. And other than that, next week I believe will be with my co-host the second Wednesday of each month, Karen Robinson. Not sure what we're going to be talking about yet. I'd have to look at my notes. It's been awfully busy. Some of you know that I've been limping around for 3 months with a walking cast on because I broke my foot in 3 places. And my parents moved, lot been going on. And so to tell you the truth, I just don't remember what we're going to be talking about next week, but I do know that I'll be here. I'm here every Wednesday, so it's not hard for me to remember. Like some of the hosts that are on once a month or twice a month, you know, they can get their calendar confused. I can't. If it's Wednesday, I'm here. So just tune in and you'll see what we're going to be talking about. And I'd like to also thank our sponsor. In fact, TBI Survivor Network is our sponsor, and we don't ask for money. It's just been a thing. We've never, our owner never wanted us to ask for contributions, but at the same time, 7 nights a week with the 50 or so different hosts that I've trained in the 10 and a half years I've been here, you know, he's paid for this so that we can help raise awareness and advocate. So if you want to make a donation to Brain Injury Radio, we're coming into holiday time. You can write it off. We are a nonprofit. And if this is a place you'd like to make a donation to help us pay for our overhead, he won't say it, but I will. A lot of you know how to get a hold of me and, you know, our friends on Facebook, or Brain Injury Radio has a page on Facebook, and you can get a hold of either me or Craig if you would like to make a contribution, or if you know somebody who may want to sponsor the network or a show, we would appreciate that as well. I'm going to play a song here. The other thing I was going to tell you that you can do is he has had a band for a long time. They just did their final three record set, and I know I'm talking in antique language, but a huge undertaking, and we're going to be on their final tour, and they weren't able. You know, COVID didn't end in 9 months or a year like we hoped it would. And so they did not get to go on the tour. And that's where musicians make their money, is on tour. But every little bit helps. So I'm going to play a song called Brain Injury Road. And because this is Brain Injury Radio Network, and you can check out the THEER, the character R, insane, TheRInsane.com. And you're going to see a zillion songs. Craig is quite prolific in writing, as Anne is in books and journalism. He is in music and lyrics, and so you should be able to find a few things that you like on there. I encourage you to buy something for your own personal playlist, and that also helps the cause and gives you some cool music to listen to. So I'm going to play back-to-back. First, I'm going to play The Art Insane, Brain Injury Road, is the name of this song, and then I'm going to close it with something a little softer. It's a Native American band, Brule, B-R-U-L-E. You can find them at brulerecords.com, and I'm going to be playing Night Tree. It happens to be the title cut off of a CD featuring Nicole, who plays the flute. So I'm going to start with Craig and Brain Injury Road, and then Brule. So TheRInsane.com and BruleRecords.com, featuring a couple of my great indie musicians. So thank you so much for being here tonight and listening. I appreciate your support. Good night, and God bless. Ever been down before so low, you just
like to fight. Full time boy shit is for the rest of your life. Sounds like you, well, you're just like me. The only difference is I found a reason to be free. Like the birds in the sky or a fish release. Free like the sun setting over the sea. And I feel so high, just can't help it. Ask myself the reasons why I'm blessed with a life so full of benefits. That I'm gonna keep on walking down my road until I'm tired. When are we gonna stop and realize everybody's equal? I don't know. But as far as I can tell, the rich are getting rich while the poor are needing help. So dig right down deep inside of your soul to find the peace, love, and happiness to shine like gold in your mind. I won't look back till I know.